bent over the couch, you say? Well, I never. Hi, I'm Paul McInnes. This is Music Weekly from Guardian.co.uk, and today we're Sheffield flavoured. We'll be speaking to Tony Christie about local pride, Richard Hawley, and That Way to Amarillo. Paul Lester will join us to discuss new music from Alexis Taylor of Hot Chip, Violins, and The Very Best. Kitty Empire will be reminiscing over Husker Du, and we'll have your face back too. But first, let's get down to monkey business with Matt Helders. Was Matt Helders' version of Dreamer, the old rave classic by Livin' Joy, that got to number one back in 1995. It forms part of a new compilation that Helders, who you may know as the Arctic Monkeys drummer, has put together as part of the Late Night Tales series. Regular listeners may know I'm something of a Helders fanboy, having raved about his remixes on here and also recently completed a tattoo of his face on my belly. So it was only natural, therefore, to pursue the opportunity of getting an interview with the man, and last week I headed up to the Steel City to meet Helders and discuss his production work, his remixing, and his feelings on his hometown. Seeing as we were sitting in the Monkees' rehearsal room, we also discussed his day job. First of all, you've got a clothing line, a club, production sideline, and now a compilation. What is going to be next? You going to launch an airline?
Yeah, I've always wanted to do an airline and call it Ginger Air.
Ginger Air?
Yeah, I thought that'd be... Chris Evans could do it, because he's got ginger as his thing, but only for the name. I'm not bothered about actually having an airline. These times, probably too expensive to run an airline.
What about actual gingers? Would we get a discount?
That's probably one of the benefits of it, of it being Ginger Air. Yeah.
The thing about gingers is, like, we're not very good in hot climates.
Yeah, so it would be winter flight, like to cold places, like Austria. Although it's still quite sunny in it. But
now it seems like you've been enjoying yourself with all these side projects. What kind of stuff are you making when you're making your original tunes? What if you had to put a genre to it? Is it electronic music?
Yeah, it's electronic, but varying like tempos and stuff. Like some might be hip hop tempos, but still sound electronic. That's something I'm still like toying with, different things like putting live drums on as well. But I quite like drum machines. And it's funny, like, people say to me, why don't you just play drums on it as soon as you play drums? But it's not all about that. I mean, it's nice to have the feel of real drums, because you can't really you can't recreate it. But, like, the sound of electronic drums that you can't necessarily get from a drum kit. It's kind of like my remixes are, but without the vocal on. Because a lot of time when I do remix, I just get rid of everything except for the vocal and maybe a little bit so people still recognise something.
You must have been pretty proud of what you did manage to achieve with the drums in Favourite Worst Nightmare, because you really, you know, that's one of the most striking things about the whole album is the prominence of the drums and what you're doing with them.
Yeah, no, definitely. It keeps adding pressure to the next thing. Like, next time we record and stuff, it'll be like, is it better than that or is it as good as that? But yeah, that album I were particularly proud of, like, just in general, the drums on that. And I don't know why it all came about. It's probably from us playing live and seeing different bands and just picking things up along, like, throughout the year of touring or whatever.
I heard something about you seeing Queens of the Stone Age and thinking, I'm going to hit these skins a lot harder from now on.
Yeah, that would pretty much, it made me think that I weren't really trying that hard, and thought I thought, oh wow, like, so yeah, I had to step it up a bit then.
Is that what brought on the boxing?
Yeah, that was kind of more to keep fit on tour, but it does help the drums as well, I suppose. But it's just because on tour you think, oh, I'm drumming every night, and then you think, yeah, but then I'm drinking after and having a pizza or whatever, so it don't really make a difference. Because there were like that thing, there were like a thing in paper about drummers being as fit as professional footballers.
So going into Late Night Tales, which is your upcoming compilation, what would constitute for you a late night, by the way? Are we talking 3 o'clock in the morning territory or 9 o'clock in the morning?
Yeah, probably the latter, just because I like kind of thought about it as if after we'd already been out to a club or whatever, or I'd DJed somewhere. Like, through talking to friends about it, saying, oh, what do we do when we go in? Like, just thinking about it, like, that way. Because I thought, you're not ready just to chill out as soon as you get in. You still want to, like... Only reason you've left is probably because club's closed or whatever. So, you know, that's the way I thought about that. But I think the common thing I went for is, like, either, like, the drum beat or, like, a good riff. Just more like a groove element to them all, I think. Which is something I look for in tunes, no matter what, really, but...
I've read anecdotally that you used to listen to a lot of hip-hop. Yeah. Is that where you got your love for the groove from?
Yeah, I think it must have been... that's the kind of music I did listen to at school. Even though, like, I always had Oasis there as well.
Mm-hmm.
That were kind of, that just went ongoing. So the hip hop thing was just on the sideline, and because I DJed a bit then as well, when I was like 15, I played like garage and hip hop and dance music and stuff. Oh, then right. It made sense to play that kind of stuff, because when you thought DJ, you thought club and dance, whatever. You never really saw then like people playing indie as a DJ.
And was that something that predated your drumming, or did your drumming predate that music?
Yeah, hip hop was, because I started drumming when I was 16, so I kind of DJed for a bit, then got a drum kit. Like, that's when we started the band, so it was kind of, we'd all play together and play covers of like the Strokes and stuff. But at the same time, if I were on my own, I'd be playing along to like the hip hop stuff, because it was kind of fun to do, I think.
Moving from drums to big wobbly bass lines, your remixes and stuff, and dreaming on the compilation, you've reworked that rave classic and you've given it a big kind of squelchy Sheffield.
Yeah.
Like what strikes me as a Sheffield sound.
Yeah.
And do you still live in Sheffield when you're not on tour?
Yeah, I do. I'm actually moving into town soon, but I live like where I grew up in High Green, which is just outskirts of Sheffield. So I'm still happy here. It's probably because I don't spend all my time here. I bet people who are here every day get bored of it and move, like anywhere. Again and again, we come to improve, yeah. Again and again, we lost your deep root, man.
With regards to Sheffield, it seems like we were talking about the Roots Maneuver remix you did that I really like a lot, and he's now based up here. There's obviously, we've talked about the bassline sound and that it seems like there's something going on.
It's
quite exciting at the moment.
It's good, yeah. In general, like music, cause at first people were just talking about bands, like Sheffield bands are coming out and stuff, but I don't think it is just about that, because there's like amazing DJs and like little club nights that not many people know about, with like these and artists and stuff, like graffiti artists, and it's like, it just seems like a very creative place at the moment. And I don't know if it is just at the moment or whether I've just realised it now, just because I've like met loads more people and I've been introduced to these different things that have probably been going on since before I was born, but you just don't realise. So yeah, I think it's a good place to be at the moment, I think.
Where are the places in Sheffield that things are going on, where people are moving?
Well, there's like a club night called Cabal, which is where like Toddler T plays there a lot, and there's like amazing DJs there. So it's usually like in a different place. It's like once a month. But in terms of like little clubs, it's like, it's almost like there isn't anything unless you really know about it, which is like these places like the Morgue and stuff. Which is cool though, if you do know about it. And then once loads of people know about it, they'll move it somewhere else and there'll be another one. It's kind of quite exciting like that.
So tell me about this space. Is this a rehearsal room for the band?
Yeah, this is where we rehearse most of the time. Like, sometimes we go away and do it, like if we really need to concentrate, because it's near all the houses, we just, like, we'll turn up late or whatever, or we'll just end up going for a drink and then say, oh, should we just go home and come back in the morning? And like, so when we go away, like we did like 2 weeks on a farm, like a studio on a farm in Norfolk. And we just, like, kind of... Like,
it's my home county there.
It's amazing.
Flat.
But we just... very flat, yeah. I think we're probably just more lazy when we're in Sheffield, just because it's just too distracting. Mm-hmm. Like, you're like, oh, I've got to go like to my mum's for tea or whatever. Like, I told her I'd go, I hadn't seen her for ages. And then it's like, all right, then, yeah, we'll just come back in the morning at night. Because it's not even like we don't want to do it. It's not like we just think, can't be bothered. It's just, there is, like, a lot of things going on when we're here. It's the only time we'll get to see his mates and stuff. So it's like, oh, should we just go for a drink with them? And...
Looking, what, 18 months on since the release of the last album, have you been pretty much touring since then?
Last show we did were in December, end of last year. Yeah, we've been off, done a bit of little bits of recording, and that's when I've had time to do all this other stuff, like putting compilation together and that, and because Alex has obviously been away with Last Shadow Puppets, so we've kind of all had time to do his own thing for a bit.
But it starts again in the new year.
Yeah, in the new year. We're gonna do a bit more recording next month. And then we'll probably be in here most of December getting ready to go out again.
So is this, you're working on the third album right now?
Yeah.
And is that going good?
Yeah, we made a start on it about like a few weeks ago. And we're going to go back and probably try and finish it off.
Oh really? So that's quite quick. So like two.
Yeah, that'll two, be like two lots of 2 weeks at the moment. It's probably doable actually for us to finish it in this next block, but we don't want to like put pressure on saying we've got to finish it this time. You know. Yeah, plenty of ideas still, which also help with projects that we do on his own, because things like that Alex will have picked up while he's been doing Shadow Puppets and I've been while doing remixes can sometimes come to Arctic Monkeys. Not like in a big way, but there'll be certain things that'll definitely be influenced if it's just drum beats or anything like that. But
and how do you do that? Is that something you work out in the process of jamming something, or do you sit down at a meeting room and say,
oh no, yeah,
it's agenda?
It's more just getting in this, like getting in the practice room, and there'll be some ideas first because we've never been like a band who just jams and then goes, oh yeah, that's good, play that again. It's always like there might be like a riff or some chords, or even sometimes starts from a drum beat and then there'll be something written around that. But Alex is like writes things on his own, obviously a lot of time, like lyrics and maybe just the basics of a tune, and then we'll like all add his own bits and just do it. It's all like done together. It's never like I'll do the drums, you do the bass. Sometimes like we suggest things to each other as well, which is good.
Oh, that's very interesting. Is anybody less receptive to other people's ideas than anyone else?
No, I think it's all pretty. I mean, we never really suggest lyrics because that's more like a personal thing. Right. It's, right. But he'll often ask us like which line we prefer or something. If he's got two options, we're like, should I say this or this? Which is good, like that, because it kind of involves us all a bit more.
So this is where the magic happens, right here.
This is it, yeah.
This is it. MTV Cribs, eat your heart out.
Yeah.
That was Matt Helders, and his Late Night Tales compilation is out now. Furthermore, if you're ever in Sheffield, I can recommend a trip to the Bowery, where Helders has a shop and former Arctic Monkey Andy Nicholson has a bar. I recommend the salted beef sandwich. It's very nice. It comes with a little bit of horseradish. Now, here sitting patiently alongside me, waiting to get a word in edgeways, is Rosie Swash. How are you today, Rosie?
I'm very well. How are you?
I'm all right, thanks very much. So you've been waiting all that time and that's the best you can do?
Yes.
Yes. And also here, it's Paul Lester, Mr. New Band of the Day, who completes the set for this week's Singles Club. How are you, Paul? Any...
Oh, you're good.
Looking at you.
Hello.
Looking at you.
What do you like this look?
our listeners will not be able to see, but you are dressed like very much of this 21st century, but a beggar of the 21st century.
You know, but the reason I dress like this, I dress deliberately shabbily so that when people come up to me and say, have you got any money? I go, funny enough, I was just going to ask you exactly the same thing. During this particularly difficult financial time. It happens more often than not.
I hear there was an untoward encounter out of a sandwich shop the other week.
It was a bizarre encounter, yeah. People just swear that I'm making this up.
Hang on. Let me just delineate here for the listeners, right? You've got a blue beanie on, which looks like it's secondhand. A green Puma hooded top.
Original, though. That's the actual thing. It's not like Pima or Pima. It's actually
You stretched to an original piece of Puma sportswear. Yeah. You've got a leather jacket you claimed to bought in Amsterdam in 1944. Or was it 94?
94.
Anyway.
94.
And you've got a pair of boots on which has heels as thick as my fist.
They're chunky.
They are chunky.
It's getting rough out there, so I like to be prepared.
So let's go back to the sandwich shop.
So basically, I'm sitting outside a sandwich shop having a rolled up cigarette because that's how tough times are for me. I wanted to sit down, I wanted to relax, take it easy. I'm rolling away, licorice papers, the works. When a gentleman, I say gentleman, term used advisedly, comes striding towards me, proffering in his fingerless gloved hand, where it looked like a piece of metal. I thought, what's he going to do with that piece of metal? Is he going to cut me? Is he going to strike me about the head? Guess what it was? It was a pound coin. He thought I was sitting there begging for change.
And lo and behold, you took that pound,
didn't you? I took the pound. I actually did try to hand it. I said, no, I don't actually. I thought, actually, I do need that pound.
It'll get me on the bus.
Yeah.
Well, Paul, it's great to have you here, our own personal embodiment of the credit crunch. And so we'll start this week's Singles Club with your selection, and that's Already Over by Violins.
Well, that's
That's Violins with Already Over. Violins only formed at the beginning of this year, but fortunately they did so in New York, which meant there was an audience for their considered psychedelia. By considered psychedelia, I mean they've taken a lot of drugs and tried to put the experience into song, which might be why they describe their influences as being descriptions of nightmares, the passing of time, speculations on spiritual messages, accounts of hallucinations. They come to the UK for the first time in November to play pub-sized venues, but if all the buzz about them being the new MGMT continues, they may have to knock down the Houses of Parliament in order to build a big enough venue. Paul Lester, it's been a good year.
It's been a really great year for American bands, but specifically bands from Brooklyn, and even more specifically, you could possibly say it's been a great year for alumni of the Wesleyan College in Connecticut, where MGMT, I think Amazing Baby, Chairlift, and this lot have got some kind of connection with.
Check out that knowledge. Yeah. What knowledge?
See what I did there?
Yeah, you did.
I didn't even look at the piece of paper. Well, I kind of vaguely looked at the piece of paper. But yeah, I think in about a week's time, they will be supporting MGMT and Boy Crisis at a very small venue in Camden. But the buzz is building. I think they're great. I mean, Black Kids were great. And Fleet Foxes have been great. But specifically, MGMT, Boy Crisis, Hockey, Amazing Baby, Chairlift, and now this lot really have turned that particular corner of America into something vaguely resembling the swinging 60s or the Carnaby Street of 2008. They've done it with a slightly different sound. It is a psychedelic sound, and they've applied that psychedelic sound to an MGMT single, actually. I think the lead singer of Violins recently remixed MGMT's single, Time to Pretend, and they did make their debut performance at the Bowery in New York with the Ace Air and MGMT. It's a slight departure from that sound, and it reminds me, if anything, of that late 60s, what they call baroque pop sound of people like the Zombies and the Left Bank, very airy and bar harmonies and very light and fluffy, which contrasts probably with the lyrics, because the lyrics are fairly dark and they're about drug-induced hallucinations and death and nightmares and all that sort of stuff we know and love. But beautiful melodies, nicely played, well sung.
He's turning into Jimmy Hill. Somebody stop him.
Now then. I'm just astonished by the sort of the onslaught, which is the wrong word to use for such fluffy, nice, soft and melodic music. The onslaught of great bands from that place. And Violins are as good, I think, as the other ones that are being equally highly touted at the moment, like Amazing Baby and Chairlift and Hockey.
Is it possible to kind of put any COD sociological reason to that growth?
Well, maybe it's a reaction to the sort of the New York bands of 2001, which were much more primitive and garagey and rootsy in 1966-ish, and this lot are more complicated and more psychedelic infused and more 68-69, and maybe they just got fed up with doing that sort of primitive three-chord Stooges influence Ramalama garage sound.
Wow, without even taking a breath. Rosie, your view on Violins?
I don't really like it.
I'm sorry,
Paul Lester. Everything you said about them makes it sound very interesting, but Paul McInnes and I were listening to this and we came to the conclusion, well, Paul did and I agreed, that none of their songs seem to sound like they're from the same band.
Very varied. I mean,
you go through the sampler and it's like on MySpace, and it's a different genre and every track.
Yeah, yeah. One of them is Marshall and Flaming Lips-ish.
I mean, the first one I listened to was Violent Sensation Descends, which begins pretty violently, and then it has this same kind of fey indie pop sound to it that this track does, and it's not something that I've ever particularly liked. But, and I was surprised. I usually do pay attention to lyrics, which is a good thing, but I didn't hear, and so I'm surprised to see it's all about drug-induced this, that and the other, because it sounds so pure and nice.
I think they cover their tracks pretty well.
Yeah.
It makes me think of this track in particular. It makes me think of not of California or indeed the 60s, but the 80s and UK indie. That's sort of House Martin. It's almost like House Martin.
Oh, no, you're putting me off it now.
Yeah.
Prefab Sprout a bit?
Yeah, a little bit.
And
the vocals are almost Morrissey-ish.
The Thrills, maybe?
Morrissey-ish.
Yeah.
Remember the Thrills?
The Thrills were good. Remember that they were good for about 9 weeks?
The loaded question, yeah.
They were from Ireland, though, so they don't strictly qualify.
But one of the hardest things to do is to be soft. They won't be able to, you know, blow you away with riffs on stage. And it is, kind of, yeah, fey is probably the word, but I like fey.
Remain studiously silent if you disagree with that sentiment. Okay, that is Already Over by Violins. It's out on November the 10th. Next up on Singles Club is Cape Cod Kwasa Kwasa, the very best version. Now, That's Cape Cod Kwasa Kwasa by The Very Best. You might recognise the guitar line and indeed the title Cape Cod Kwasa Kwasa because this version is a cover of the Vampire Weekend track. And it's by Very Best, which is a combination of Malawian musician Esau Mwamwaya, I'm sure I've pronounced that right, and Swedish-French DJ duo Radio Klit. In perhaps the best origin story since John Lydon wandered into sex, the three of them met in Esau's second-hand furniture shop in Homerton, East London. Truth. Now they've got an album as The Very Best, featuring collabos with MIA, Et Al, and Esso is now so busy he's had to find someone to cover him in the shop on weekdays. This is my choice, and I really just think the song speaks for itself. It's familiar to that Vampire Weekend number, but it's just even more joyous than the original. I like Vampire Weekend's preppy stylings, but compared to this version, they do sound a little bit detached and restrained. This is a great party song, and it does put a smile on your face, and that's it for me. Doesn't need to do any more. Mr. Lester.
It was very upbeat, wasn't it? I have a personal aversion to joyous, upbeat music, tending towards
too busy
the,
listening to Faye.
Yeah, I'm too busy being Faye, but usually miserablest and apocalyptic and fearing the worst, and that kind of stuff usually pushes me over the edge. But yeah, it's that Afrobeat thing going on, and it's very 1983, and it makes me think of people I loathed in my youth, like King Sunny A Day and the Bundu Boys.
I downloaded my first Bundu Boys track into the iPod the other week.
Did you like that?
I'm just coming to your 1983.
Yeah.
I quite enjoy it.
But I like the idea of so-called indie bands being informed by that stuff, so I like the idea of Vampire Weekend. I liked it when it was done the first time around when people like Talking Heads, where they took it into a sort of more serious polyrhythmic direction.
But I suppose this is reclaiming that claimed sound.
Yeah, and I'm quite excited by the prospect, because the rumour had it that Franz Ferdinand was going to do that, weren't they, at one point on their next album. Maybe they still are. And I think it's an interesting thing to do, to take that, so is it high life guitar sound and do all those things, but within the confines of a traditional guitar bass drums unit.
My feeling about this is that it's an African musician who was in lots of bands in Malawi, but was mainly a drummer and a backing vocalist, reclaiming something that has been claimed from African heritage in the first place. But maybe I'm overreading it. Rosie, your thoughts?
I don't think you're overreading it. I think that's true. I think it's great fun to listen to. When I first heard it, I thought, oh, great, that's a really good idea. And he's done it with MIA, hasn't he? He's done it with a couple of her tracks. It's kind of limited in what it's going to do, and it would be nice if now he's got the attention of people's ears, he can do stuff that's pure and original and people are still interested in it. That would be good, rather than treating it like a gimmick. But this whole thing of like claiming and claiming back, I mean, it's true, he's done that and that's good, but I think it's okay. You know, it's like there's this kind of feeling that, oh, Vampire Weekend are playing black people's music, as if you would ever say that about an African band who wanted to cover the Beatles, although you might advise them against it. But like, it's okay for people to share musical influences. It is in fact a good thing, and the proof is in the pudding, is that someone who's listened to Vampire Weekend and loves that song will then go out and listen to this, and blogs like Stereogum and Fader will feature it when they may not have previously done so.
So has my choice got your seal of approval or not? I can't.
Yeah,
tell.
I do feel that.
Yes.
I feel it's a bit limited, though. I'm sorry, but I don't think it's going to be one that I'm going to be playing over and over again.
I think if you say a bit limited, that's not really a seal of approval, is
limited
it? Once again,
actually, is a compliment in certain circles, just not musical ones.
The ones you hang around in general. Okay, right. Well, that is The Very Best with their version of Cape Cod Kwasa Kwasa and their mixtape, which does lots more things on a very similar limited vein, is available to download now, and the album follows next month. The final track on Singles Club is Coming Up by Alexis Taylor.
You are a love that lasts forever, one that will never fade away. I want to help you with your problem. Stick around.
That's Alexis Taylor with Coming Up. Now, Alexis Taylor is that one from Hot Chip, the one that pops into your head with the glasses. Peeved at the infernal workings of the music industry, Taylor has gone solo, hoping to bang out all the tunes he would never be able to release through the chip, including this cover of the Paul McCartney classic. He's sticking by his word, having released an entire album this week almost without anyone noticing. If he continues at this rate, it'll be a collection of Alanis Morissette covers before Christmas. Now, Rosie, this is your choice.
It is indeed. As we were just playing it then, Paul S. went, what? This is so different from the original. And that's what's brilliant about it, is that the only thing that is the same, as if this isn't important, but is the lyrics and the melody. But what he's taken, what was kind of now feels like a kitsch, kind of silly pop song, and stripped away all the aspects of it that would get your attention the first time round, including Paul McCartney and Linda.
And the great bass line.
And the great bass line, and just giving it this very moody, soft guitar, and brings out the fact that the lyrics are actually very lovely. And he sounds like Paul McCartney when he sings, and I've never noticed this before. I don't know whether it's just like English man singing in an American accent thing, but it made me think, you do sound a lot like Paul McCartney.
Yeah, particularly on Flower, isn't it? Yeah, no, I noticed that. I agree with you on that, he really brings out the delicacy in the lyrics, which just are not apparent in the original at all. Paul.
I think it was at Alexis that I got together with Todd Rundgren recently for a Guardian feature.
That's right.
And it struck me during that interview that he was really going at great lengths to convince the world that Hot Chip were more than just a synth pop dance troupe, and there were other things to him. And that when I was trying to push the idea that he was Hot Chip were tremendously influenced by Todd Runger, who was the original synth pioneer from the 70s, he was saying, yeah, but I really like Neil Young, and I really like those sorts of singers, those troubadour sort of acoustic singers.
He was saying this in front of Todd Runger.
He was saying, yeah, Todd, you're okay. You had a couple of good songs, but really, I would have preferred it if you got me together with somebody that could play excoriating feedback on an electric guitar. I think he was trying to do that, and I think that's what he's trying to do. And it sounds to me like he's trying a little bit too hard to convince everybody that he has a broader palette than perhaps we assume from the Hot Chip albums. And I think it's a shame, because Hot Chip are great, and they were great at what they did, and to produce electronic pop ditties is actually no mean feat.
But if he's still making records with Hot Chip, they continue to do that.
Yeah, it's good to do, and it's good to have that outlet, I guess. Yeah, but I'm with you. I really like the original. I think it was the original that got John Lennon on the phone to Paul McCartney at the time when it came out and said, hey, you're still writing some good songs.
And you should really watch the video as well on YouTube. It's a great video, because it's Paul and Linda playing all the roles in this kind of 20-piece band, which includes her kind of doing an impression of Ron Mayall from Sparks.
Yes, that's right.
And the amazing sight of seeing Paul McCartney doing an impression of Paul McCartney in his 20s.
In so his you've got fab gear.
Yeah, exactly. And jogging his head around with a big mop top. It's really worth looking at. All right, that's Alexis Taylor, and his album Robbed Out is available through Treader Records. That's T-R-E-A-D-E-R. Now, we want your reviews of this week's tracks from Violins, The Very Best and Alexis Taylor. You can do so by posting on our blog at guardian.co.uk/music/music blog, or indeed hitting us right up in the Facebook. Tell us what you think of them, but maybe punctuate between artists. It makes it easier to read. And you can also mention these other tracks that are out to buy now. Push that rock like Sisyphus, Aerosmith, terrorist, against the F1 Abraham in the Thunderdome, bone of rainbow out of Grace Jones. Filthy Jukes, Tupac, Robot, Club Rock. Turn her into a baby eater, neatly feed her chromosome. Time's not on you, so it's so hard to set me free. You first thing I choose. Madcon, Liar. Liar. Paul Weller, Sea Spray. Can you never see what I can see? I stayed at a hotel. I left friends nearby. Martha Wainwright, Coming Tonight. We've spent the night together in this town since 1939. The Montage signifies the ceremonial ending of the week's singles club, which means we have to say goodbye to Mr. Lester of Leicester Square. And when I wrote this script, I didn't envisage you coming in dressed like that. And now I see you perched in a corner someplace.
I'm going to take this cup. I'm ready. I'm there. I'm good to go.
What your children think of you, I do not know. But thank you so much for coming in. It's been great to have
you
as ever. Remember, you can read a textualised version, actual printed words of Singles Club every Wednesday on guardian.co.uk/music. Next on Music Weekly, it's back to Sheffield and into the arms of Tony Christie. In a foreign place, the saving grace was the feeling that it was a heart that he was stealing. Oh, he was ready to impress, the fierce excitement, the eyes are bright,
he couldn't wait to get away. I bet that Juliet was just the icing on the cake. Make no mistake, no.
That's Tony Christie and The Only Ones Who Know. Now, Rosie Swash, how are you? I feel we've been a little distant today.
Is that right?
Yeah, I feel I've been concentrating quite a lot on Paul Lester, not giving you enough attention, not giving you a chance to shine.
He's a man that steals the limelight in any room.
That is true. So do you care to make up for it by explaining to our listeners a little bit about Tony Christie? Because he's a bit of a legend, right?
Well, you know, he's probably Britain's only real crooner. So to people who like that, he is. But to everybody else, he's a man who sent... Is this the way? It's Amarillo. Not once, but twice. Original in 71 did make him a huge name, but it was only ever his biggest hit. And it revived his career recently when Peter Kay took it on for Comic Relief 2005. And now he's back and he's got an album called Made in Sheffield, which we discussed a few weeks ago, which is a series of covers of Sheffield bands, Pulp, Arctic Monkeys and Richard Hawley, who is the only other modern day crooner type, also from Sheffield. And I spoke to Tony a couple of weeks ago when he came in about this album, which he's very proud of. And I wanted him to explain to me how it came about.
Well, basically, and it's really my fault because about three and a half years ago, during the Amarillo madness, I call it the madness, because of the success of the song, I was sent all these demos of songs from writers, amateur writers and professional writers, but, you know, like 20 songs a day I was getting. But I did get one. I did get one from Richard Hawley, which, to my shame, I never heard. I never listened to, but my son heard it. A couple of years later, we were driving home. It was late at night. I had Radio 2 on. And they played Cole's Corner by Richard Hawley. And I said to my son, I said, you know, that's what a great sound. That's the sound I want behind me, that lush strings and the, you know, the sort of quality. And he said, well, don't you remember, Dad? He said he sent you that song about 3 years ago and you turned it down. I went, oh, my God. But I said, well, I want to do that song on my album. And we rang Richard and said, would you produce it? And he said, I'll tell you what, I'd like to produce an album. And I found out then that he was a huge fan. And he said, I want to do an album. And then, a couple of days later, he says, you're from Sheffield. He says, I'm from Sheffield. He says, we've got some great talent from Sheffield. Why don't we do an album of purely Sheffield material? Songwriters or performers, whatever. So we sat around listening to material, and I was absolutely stunned by some of the quality of stuff. A writer called Michael Braga, who the first song I heard was "Danger as a Woman in Love," and I said, it's a staggering song. And I said, well, this song is fantastic. And they said, well, it's about 15 years old, would probably never have seen the light of day. And three songs from Richard Hawley's guitar player, absolutely beautiful songs. So that's the sort of standard that we were listening to. And, of course, to be able to do songs like Louise from the Human League, Pulp, Jarvis Cocker stuff, I mean, it's limitless. We could have done three albums. We never even got near Joe Cocker or Paul Carrack.
So let's look at what's on there. We've got, there's an Arctic Monkeys song.
Yeah.
And you said before there's Pulp, the Human League. I mean, is it possible to say that there's something about all these songs or even, you know, Sheffield performers that you think is a typical trait of theirs or something that ties these songs together?
The thing about Sheffield is it's never blown its own trumpet. Sheffield has always been a very innovative music city. Manchester and Liverpool have always bragged about their music. Sheffield never has, and I never knew. I don't know whether it's the trait of the characters or the city character, or whether it's the fault of the city councillor who was not pushing the fact that there's so much talent come out of Sheffield.
Hold back the night from us, cherish the light for us. Don't let the shadows hold back the dawn. Cold city lights glowing.
I remember reading something you said before about young people should take more notice of their elders. And I wondered whether that was part of the inspiration for you for doing this album, was to do something that would catch the ears of people that maybe didn't know your stuff, the Tony Christie stuff before this.
What I found out since we started doing it, I was with Alex Turner from the Monkees on Monday at the Q Awards. I mean, he looks, I know he's older, but he looks about 16 to me. And we sort of sat chatting, and I think what happens with these young bands is that it's their parents who have got my records. So they've, as babies, have grown up listening to my stuff, you know. And it was the same with Peter Kay. His mum used to play, which I didn't like, this remark. He said, oh, yeah, he says, my mum, he says, she had your albums and she used to play it when I was a baby to send me to sleep. I thought, well, thank you. That was a double lap. Yeah, thank you. I wasn't doing anything in England at all or in the UK at all. My wife and I, we'd got this holiday home in Spain and we decided to sell up and go and live in Spain. And then I had a phone call and somebody sent me a song. Said, oh, here's a song that's been written for you by Jarvis Cocker.
Walk Like a Panther.
Yeah, and it was Walk Like a Panther. So I said, I don't know whether I want to do it. My son said, oh, do it. It's quirky. Do it. Try if you can to walk like a man, but you don't come near. You've got to fly. Thing I knew is they said, oh, it's in the top 10. Radio 1's playing the hell out of it. I came back, did Top of the Pops, and went back on my tours of Germany. And because I didn't have any representation in England, my manager was from Munich. He wasn't really interested in the UK at all. So we let it slip, did nothing about it until the Peter Kay thing. That sort of sparked it all off and made me come back to England.
And you're back here.
I'm back here because for two reasons. First, I wanted to get back to the UK. I always felt that I was... It's nice to be popular somewhere else, but isn't it great to be appreciated in your own country? So I really wanted to get back and try and get my feet back under the table in the UK. So that's what I'm really working hard at trying to do now.
Back to the Jarvis Cocker thing. A fantastic tune. Did you actually meet him when you did that, or did you just come over and do the vocal?
I came over, did it with the All Seeing Eye, which were two producers. I met Jarvis I did the Ronnie Scott's, and Jarvis came along with the All Seeing Eye. And we sort of met there. That was the first time we'd met. And I just thought it was... the song is quirky, but, I mean, he's a quirky character. And I've met him since when I did a guest appearance with Richard Hawley at the Albert Hall. And I just warmed to him. I just think he's an absolute national treasure. You want to take him home with you?
Did you know that he was a big fan of yours before?
No, I didn't.
Because I've heard, and I don't know whether this is true, but I'm sure that I heard a while ago around the time that he was such a big fan of yours in his youth that he actually camped outside your house.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Okay. I'm very fond of him, but I never want to see him again. Okay, but were you aware of Pulp at that time? Did you know?
No, the only thing I knew about Pulp was Common People. The next thing I knew was Richard Hawley. And then they said, oh, Richard used to be in Pulp for 8 years.
Are you and Richard, would you say you're friends now?
I would say so, yeah. We hit it off immediately. He said he was impressed the fact that when I first went in the studio to meet him, I walked in the studio with a mug of Builder's tea in one hand and a bag of chips in the other, which was from a chip shop around the corner.
Come on,
rock
then.
And roll, man.
Let's do this.
He warmed to me then.
Yeah. Did you give him a chip?
Yes.
We mentioned earlier you played the Royal Albert Hall.
Yeah.
You've played a lot of huge places and, yeah, you know, played legendary places like Ronnie Scott's. What's still your favourite kind of gig?
Actually, I mean, there's a thrill. The Albert Hall is an incredible place to stand on the stage. It's actually frightening. I do like working smaller places when you can see the whites of their eyes and you almost hear them breathing. It's nice to do that because that's probably going back to my roots, which was the cabaret, the small cabaret venues.
You mentioned at the beginning that it was actually quite difficult for you to whittle down the track listing for Made in Sheffield.
Yeah.
Is there going to be a Made in Sheffield 2? Or what's
we could have easily done two albums. I mean, we never got near ABC or Joe Cocker or... So, I mean, it was endless, really. We could have done at least another album, plus brand-new songwriter, good songwriters. But I think the next thing Richard wants to do, because I did a couple of my songs on the album, which Richard really enjoyed, and he said, well, he'd like to do an album completely of my songs, which, yeah, I'd quite enjoy that.
Tonight, under the perfect sky, I gaze into outer space, and all I can see
is your face. So I'm waiting here for you to light up my lonely nights like you used to do.
That was Tony Christie, and Made in Sheffield is out on the 10th of November.
Thanks V much, Rosie. Now it's time to put on our rosy-tinted glasses, you see what I mean, and head back in time to the feature we had been calling Sniffing Old Glue. But, well, we might not be anymore, because Rosie thinks we made a bomb choice, don't you, Rosie?
Do you want to say my name a little bit more?
Yes, Rosie. I'm just trying to make up, you know.
Wake up for the distance.
To the distance earlier. I felt
well,
really bad
Paul,
about the distance.
This is what I think, Paul.
Yes.
Sniffing Old Glue, obviously musical reference, but probably from the one era of music that won't ever appear in this feature. It's not very punky, is it? It's not very rock and roll. It's about nostalgia.
It's not very, I want to destroy, I want to smash everything that went
before,
is it?
I want to make a little fanzine for the punk era. It's not that. So I felt it was misrepresentative of what the feature does, which is generally people waxing lyrical about musicians they really love and hold dear to their heart. So that is my feeling.
I think you've got a point, you see. This is why I made you repeat it on the pod. I think you've got a point. So with that in mind...
I'm sorry to the person who put that forward.
Was it Ken? It was Portishead, wasn't it?
Oh, it's Portishead, I'm sorry. Who also had some other good suggestions as far as...
So we apologise personally to Portishead, but the polls are open again. And at this rate, we will stay open forever. But who cares? When this week you get to listen to Kitty Empire talking about Husker Du.
Was New Day Rising by Husker Du, or Husker Du if you're American. They were a punk trio from Minneapolis who made some fantastic records, unwittingly revolutionised the American music industry, and then broke up in 1987 without ever really making much money. Without Husker Du, there might not have been a Nirvana, and heavens, no Green Day. They were one of the first hardcore bands to slow down and pay attention to melody, something which Nirvana, another punk trio, later picked up on and ran with. More to the point, Husker Du were one of the first American underground bands to sign to a major label, unthinkable at the time, paving the way for countless others in the 80s, and they took the underground overground. Nowadays, you can hear echoes of Husker Du in The Hold Steady, an equally magisterial band who may live in Brooklyn, but they come from Minneapolis, where they grew up on the local hardcore bands and the righteous growl of one of Husker Du's singers, Bob Mould. Here's Husker Du's celebrated summer, a song Hold Steady fans might just recognise, since the Hold Steady pay tribute to it on their own Constructive Summer, which opened their recent album Stay Positive. Husker Du's legacy is only half the story, though. They were riveting in their own right. In the red corner, Bob Mould, guitarist, who struggled with his sexuality in the macho but rather homoerotic world of hardcore. After a stint fronting his 90s band Sugar, he's now a wrestling buff who makes electronica records. In the blue corner, frustrated drummer Grant Hart, who sang the other half of the band's songs. His heroin use aggravated the tensions in the band. The friction between Mould and Hart made for some great records. My favourites are 1985's New Day Rising album and Husker Du's gloomy major label debut, Candy Apple Grey. But the pressure cooker atmosphere in Husker Du culminated in the suicide of their manager. The band didn't outlast him for long. Here's Grant Hart's Don't Wanna Know If You Are Lonely, one of Husker Du's greatest hits.
Thank you. That was Kiddie Empire. That was the feature with no name. Now, over to you now. Actually, before over to you, an apology. Last week's pod, it has to be said, was something of an Andrew Sachs Ansophone message of a show. We messed up lots of things, including the ability to comment on the blog. First up, for now, where's everybody? Auditioning for HSM4? Paul, after some more lessons, I'm sure you'd be able to put your hands up with all elegance required by Mr. Ortega. But on the other hand, your Hollywood career and the following abandonment of Music Weekly would certainly break our hearts. So I'm glad you gave up. That's probably the most touching post I've ever had on the blog, and refers to a weirdo little video I've done for the film site where I learn how to dance in a way typical of High School the Musical. And if you're not inclined to homoeroticism, well, you will be after you've watched that, let me tell you. There's a bit more from Fanao. He says, anyway, this is a music podcast, quite right it is. And I would just like to say thanks to Laura Barton for the marvellous Golden Gate Quartet. So there you go, Laura, message to you. Rama Lucian finishes off, I'm not convinced by Lamb Chops, musical chops. He or she writes, one of my friends recommended me Nixon, which I duly went out and bought. I listened to it about 5 times and it has remained on my shelf for 7 years, unplayed and unloved. In the interview, Kurt Wagner didn't come across as a massively engaging presence and did little to convince me that if I ran out and bought his new Return to Form record, that it wouldn't be left on the shelf. Fuck buttons sound all right though, but it was 5 in the morning and I was standing in the bagel shop in Stoke Newington. The bagel shop in Stoke Newington? Didn't know about that one.
Yeah,
have to check it out. Over on Facebook, we have new friends in Bernadette Giacomazzo, James Campbell, Alec Downey, Tom Rackham, Alex Box and Alex Gadget. It must be Alex Week. We also have Andy Deej Duggan as a friend. And we've got loads of correspondence on Facebook this week, so we're really pleased. Keep it up. We had a few definitions of aquacrunk. And we also got lots of wishes of a happy birthday because...
unbeknownst to us,
it must be Guardian / Music's second birthday this week. So happy birthday to us. Let's go eat some cake. Anyway, you can find us on Facebook. You can become our friend. You can leave your reviews. You can post whimsy. We don't mind. Please do so. And of course, you can comment on this week's guests, tracks and more at guardian.co.uk/music/music blog. But we're out of here now till you next hear from us, which is generally a Friday. So it's goodbye from Rosie Swash.
Goodbye.
And it's goodbye from Rosie Swash. Goodbye. We'll see you next week.